I wanted to do an independent topic, not related to last week, not related to next week, just a one-time topic because I was looking into the Shaila recently. It's not really much of a Shaila, but it's an interesting, raises a couple of interesting points, and I was looking into it recently, so I thought it was something that caught my eye. I thought you might find it interesting as well. And really, the topic relates most to the Dalet Parshios, which are coming up, and specifically to Parshas Zachar, specifically to Amalek. This is really an Amalek topic, so we're a couple of weeks early for Parshas Zachar, but I'll read you what I read in a Sefer that caught my eye, and then we'll go from there. There's a Sefer called Vahar Revna. I picked it up recently in the Storm Store. I was just browsing around, and I picked up the Sefer. It looked interesting. I mentioned it here before. It's essentially just questions that came to Rav Eliashiv's son-in-law, whose name escapes me right now. No, what's the name? Anyone remember? I forgot his name again. I don't know. Rav Zilberstein, right. To Rav Eliashiv's son-in-law, Rav Zilberstein, which supposedly a question that relates to each week's Parshas HaShavua. It's not always a strong connection, sometimes a weak connection. Rav Zilberstein, I don't think, did not write the Sefer. It's just people listening in to what he answered to each of these questions. So some are interesting, some are completely not interesting, some, you know, it's hit or miss. But one that caught my eye, which is, we'll soon see, maybe not such a major question, la halacha, but it's certainly a question of interest. If no one else wants, I'm going to keep talking. Maybe a question of interest is as follows. He writes in Sefer Va'arevna, Hine lifnei mispar shanim el shari beis hadin agadol b'Yerushalayim. Before a number of years, to the gates of the beis hadin agadol in Yerushalayim, higia goy mi moitza germani, a goy came of German descent, ubikesh l'sgayer, and the goy wanted to become a ger. La'achar drishos v'chakiros, nikar haya ki kavanos of Torahs. So, as anyone who comes to be Megayer, they have to check into him. They have to see, is he really doing it l'shem Shemayim? Did he just meet a girl? What exactly is the story? And it turned out that he had kavanos taharos. He meant all the right things. He wanted to become a Jew. He wanted to convert. He wanted to become a Ger Tzedek. A German guy, a regular German guy, wanted to become a Ger Tzedek. Ela shekam echad hadayanim. One of the dayanim of the Beis Din HaGadol in Yerushalayim, not sure which Beis Din he's referring to, if it's the Badatz Beis Din or if it's the Rabbanut Beis Din, but one of the dayanim from the Beis Din Yerushalayim got up, v'ta'an, and claimed, ki bal lanu l'saseik b'geruso shel nachrizeh, that we should absolutely not be involved in the gerus of this particular guy, b'shel hayosu mimotze germani, because he's German. His parents, his grandparents were killing Jews, were gassing Jews, and we're going to allow him to join Klal Yisrael. V'alo nemar b'mechilta, Rabbi Shmuel, he quotes a mechilta, which we'll get to soon. So he says, Mavur efo amar hadayan, ki la'achar maisa amalek, hishbiya HaKadosh Baruch Hu es b'nei Yisrael, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a shvua with b'nei Yisrael, ki aleihem lekabel gerim mikalu mosa olam, that we're not allowed to turn away gerim from any of the nations of the world, lema'et me'uma hamalekis, except for one exception, an amaleki person wants to convert and wants to become a Jew, we turn away someone from Amalek. So the guy claimed, the Dayan said, this guy is a German, is of German descent, the German Goyim are Amalek, we therefore are under no circumstances allowed to accept him as a Ger Tzedek. So the Shaila that was posed from Zilberstein, Ha'imta anasu shaloso chacham nechona. Was he correct? Is it the right thing? Did he say the right thing? Are we not allowed to take German Goyim as Gerim? Is that really an Isser? So there are obviously two parts to the Shaila. Part number one to the Shaila is, can we say with any level of certainty or even with any level of doubt that Germany is necessarily a Amalek? Meaning, do we have the right to assume that Nazi Germany and their descendants, apparently, meaning a generation or two removed, are Amalek and would have all of the dinim of Amalek? That's going to be question number one. Question number two that we're going to have to deal with is, assuming that it is Amalek, is it really usser to take a ger from Amalek? Is it really? Is there any such isser to not allow someone from Amalek to convert? So the starting point, obviously, is going to deal with the first question first. Are Germans considered Amalek? So we have to figure out why would anyone say that that would be so? Why would anyone say that Germans are considered Amalek? So there's an interesting Gemara, Maseches Megillah, Dav Vav, going over from Amar Aleph Tamid Beis, and the Gemara Megillah says in source number one, "V'am Rabbi Yitzchak, May Dichsiv Al Titein Hashem Me'Oyvei Rasha Zmamo Al Tafak Yiramu Sela." Don't allow the Rasha to have his way. Essentially, is what the pasuk says. Omer Yaakov Lufnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is Yaakov Avinu telling HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono Shel Olam, Al Titein LeEsav HaRasha Ta'avas Libo. Don't give Esav HaRasha what he's looking for. Zmamo Al Tafek Zugam Mamya Shel Edom. Don't remove his nose ring, which is, I guess, a symbol of Avdus. Right? Don't remove that. That's a reference to who? To Germamia Shel Edom. A certain nation called Germamia. Because the Gemara says, if they are ever given power, if they are ever given the ability to do as they please, they will literally destroy the entire world. And Rabbi Chama Bar Chanina said, there are 300 officers in Germamia Shel Edom, and there are 365 princes in Rome, and they're always warring with each other, and one of them always dies every day. And they're very busy always trying to find new leaders. So since they're always busy, there's always a void in leadership, and they're always busy looking for new leaders. That's sort of the nose ring that holds them back. That's what holds them back from destroying the world. But God, if you ever stop killing off their leaders, and you give them substantial, powerful leadership, then forget it. Then the world is going to be in big trouble. So this is a reference to some nation that apparently can destroy the entire world. Now note, the Gemara does not refer to them as a Malek, but refers to some nation, Germania, that is just a very destructive nation and a very powerful nation. Rabbi Yaakov Emden in the Hagos, on the back of the Gemara over there, says, source number two, Nir Be'enai, Kumeduma Ratzalomar, it's not Germania, but maybe you heard of it, Germania. He Ashkenaz Shalanu. Rabbi Yaakov Emden says, this is the references to Germany. Rabbi Yaakov Emden, keep in mind, writing in the 1700s, well before the Holocaust, right, says that the nation being referred to, that's this terribly destructive nation, is Germany. And if they're ever not too busy, if they ever have the time to get themselves organized, they're going to be extremely destructive to the world. So, okay, that's the first source to suggest maybe Germany is Amalek. Problem is, Gemara doesn't really say Amalek. It just says that they're really bad. And you don't need a Gemara to tell you that Germany was really bad. Right? So that's not far from the most convincing source. Second possibility of how we know, or how one might suggest, that Germany is Amalek, also from the Sefer Va'arevna, I don't know, I think I made the photocopies before I had this Maromokom printed, but it's source number three. I don't know if it might be missing there, but I'll read you what it says. He writes, the Yadua, and it's apparently well known, Ki Kasher Wilhelm Hasheni, Kesar Germania, when the Kesar of Germany, Wilhelm II, Higiel Shari Yerushalayim, visited Yerushalayim, Lo Yatsa Lekraso Rabba Shal Yerushalayim, Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld Zatzal. Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld Zatzal did not go to greet him, did not go to see him. Now that's a chiddush. Why is that a chiddush? Because generally speaking, the Gemara says that a person is supposed to go out of their way. The Gemara in Brachos Daf Yotes and other places says that a person is supposed to go out of their way, likros malchei umos ha'olam, in order to see a king, even a non-Jewish king. The Gemara goes so far as to say that maybe Kohanim could jump over certain kvaros in order to be able to go see a non-Jewish king. I'm not going to get into that whole sugya now. It's Mr. Drabanan we're dealing with, Kavod Abrios, it's a big sugya. But the Gemara says it's certainly a huge inyan to go see a non-Jewish king. Why? Because one day you're going to be able to see the honor given to a Jewish king, and you'll be mavchin, you'll see the difference between the type of honor we give to a Jewish king and the type of honor given to a non-Jewish king. And we know there's a bracha you're supposed to say when you see a non-Jewish king, when you see any king. People who go visit the president, from Jews who go visit the president all the time, say the bracha. They say a bracha on visiting a very powerful figure. That's a separate shir, which types of figures you say the bracha for, which you don't, but certainly had Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld gone to see him, he would have had to make a bracha. So why didn't he go? So this is, again, this is before the Holocaust. Why didn't he go? So Kedesh Shelo Levarcho Bebirchas HaMalachim. He didn't want to be Mevarichim. He didn't want to say a bracha on him. Why? Mishum Shahaisa Biyado Kabbalah Me'is Hagon Mivilna. The Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld had a Kabbalah from the Vilna Gaon, ki Germania hi safek amalek, that Germany is a safek amalek. And again, this is before the Holocaust. Germany was a safek amalek. V'hulo ratza levarich al safek amaleki. And he doesn't want to waste a bracha on someone who's a safek amaleki. Not that he wouldn't be chayiv in the bracha. He would be chayiv in the bracha. Any king, you have to make a bracha. But megalglin zchus al yidei zakai, right? When you want to bring a zchus, let it be over someone who's worthy, over someone who's worth a bracha. But someone like this, someone from Amalek, you don't want to spend a bracha on someone from Amalek. So there's this mysterious Kabbalah that Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld had from the Gra, and this is well known apparently in rabbinic circles. They quote this in a number of different svarim, that the Gra held that the Germans are Amalek. And again, the Gra, obviously living in the 19th century, 18th, 19th century, that the Gra held that the Germans were Amalek. So that's source number two to suggest that maybe they are Amalek. Now, it's not the most convincing source in that it's completely undocumented, meaning it's the Gra never wrote it, as far as I know, and no one knows what his source was. Just that he knew he had a feeling. I mean, it was a good guess, you know, the Holocaust happened, but nevertheless, it seems halachically, it doesn't seem particularly strong. In fact, Rav Vazner in his Tshuvas in Shevet Alevi, Chelekei Sim Kuf Mem Tes, writes, U'be'etzem she'ilasu al Kabbalah Sagra de'agramanim he'mesharish Amalek, regarding your question about the Germans being Amalek, imki l'fi ma'aseh ma'aram b'vadehim karov lahem, he says, look, I'll grant you that based on what they've done, they're certainly close to Amalek, but to say that nowadays Germans have a din of Amalek is very hard, because we say that in regards to other nations, we'll see soon, that Sancheiriv was mevalbel the entire world, he mixed up the entire world, he moved all the nations around, so we don't know really who originates where. And he says at the end, he says he can't say we know who an Amaleki is, meaning ken zayin that there are Amalekim in the world. It could very well be there are Amalekim around, but there's no way we're going to know who the Amalekim are. You're not going to be able to identify a person on the street and say that that's an Amaleki. They tell stories of various tzaddikim who would look down in the street, because if they would look up, they would know that the person, they would know who's an Amaleki and who's not. They'd be able to read it on their faces, and if they would know, then they would have to kill him, and it would be a big Chilul Hashem. I don't know, whatever. You know, you take those stories however you want to, but the point is that Rav Elzner says it can't be, that's not good enough. The Kabbalah from the Gra is not good enough. So what's the third possibility of how we might know or assume that the Germans are Amalek? So there's a well-known, I think it's become well-known, a diuk that Rav Soloveitchik quoted from either his father or his grandfather. So all of Rav Soloveitchik's Torahs are being printed now. So there's a lot of overlap, since everyone's rushing to print all of his stuff. So this particular Shtickle Torah is printed at least twice that I know of, but probably more, probably three or four times, I would bet. And there's some sort of there's some discrepancy between the printings, whether he said it in the name of his father or he said it in the name of his grandfather. I heard from Rav Shechter many times that he said it in the name of his grandfather, that he said it in the name of Rav Chaim. Someone said that they asked Rav Beryl Soloveitchik in Yerushalayim if this is true, if Rav Chaim ever said this, and he said it can't be, Rav Chaim never said such a thing. But whatever it is, they say that Rav Soloveitchik definitely said it. He said it in a drasha, and possibly in the name of his grandfather, perhaps in the name of his father. But what he said is as follows. You take a look at the Rambam. The Rambam in source number 5, two consecutive halachos. Halacha number 1, mitzvah saseh, it is hilchos melachim perkei halacha dalid, mitzvah saseh lahachrim shiva amin, shem achrim tachrimam, v'kol shebo liyado echad mehen, v'lo harago. If one of the seven nations that inhabited Eretz Yisrael, you encounter a member of one of those nations and you don't kill them, over below saseh. It's a violation of a law in the Torah, shenemar l'suchya kol neshama, l'suchya kol neshama, you shouldn't give life to any of them. Ukvar avad zichron. But then the Rambam says, but you should know, this isn't really no gayatas anymore because they're no longer around. We don't have these nations anymore. They no longer exist. So, But Lu Yitzuyur, that they did exist, meaning back in the days, before they were totally wiped out, which was a long time, right? They were supposed to, Yeshua was told, get rid of all them. At the beginning of Yeshua, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, make sure you finish the job over here, get rid of all them. Already in the Torah we were warned, get rid of every single one of them, because if you don't, they're going to be a thorn in your side, and they're going to always be, it's always going to cause you trouble. And in fact, Sefer Shoftim, in Navi, is essentially all the trouble that was caused because we didn't finish the job. We didn't get rid of them. But ultimately, the Rambam says, they're gone. Ultimately, kvar avad zichram. Now, what does it mean, they're gone? So it could mean that, like we said before, Sancheirav mixed around everybody. We don't know who's who anymore. So we have no idea who's who. We can't identify anybody as one of those nations. Look at the next halacha. V'chein mitzvah saseh la'abed zechar amalek. We also have a mitzvah saseh to get rid of Amalek. Shenemar Timcha Zechar Amalek. Pasuk says Timcha Zechar Amalek. Umitzvah sase lizkar tamin maas of haroim varivaso. We always have to remember the animosity that they had toward us. We have to remember what they've done to us. Kedei laorer evaso, because we have to keep that hateful feeling toward Amalek fresh in our hearts. We should never fall into a situation where we start to think, they're not so bad, it was many years ago. And we should always remind ourselves how cruel they were, what they did to us, so that we will have that feeling fresh. Shenemar zachar sasharas alcha Amalek. And this is the mitzvah d'oraisa of zachiras Amalek. The Gemara Darsh and Zachar means we have to verbally remind ourselves. That's Kriyas Parsha Zachar that we do every year. And Lo Sishkach is Belev. In our hearts, we have to make sure we don't forget. What's missing from that Rambam? The last Rambam about the Zayinamim, about the mitzvah to kill them, concludes with three words. Ukvar Avad Zichram. But don't worry, they're not around anymore, there's nothing to worry about anymore. This Rambam is very clearly missing those words. It doesn't say, when he's talking about Amalek, there's no Ukvar Avad Zichram. There's no, but Amalek doesn't exist anymore, which you would expect the Rambam to say. So this is very, very troubling. So Rav Salvechik quoted the Diuk in the name of either his father or his grandfather, that the reason the Rambam doesn't say it is because, in his words, Amalek is not a nation, but a notion. Amalek is not a particular nation that descends, that has lineage that descends from the original Amalekim. Amalek is an idea. Any nation that has in their minds the idea, the goal, at the top of their agenda, the extermination of Jews, is Amalek. They take on the din of Amalek. And therefore, Rav Salvechik held, and Rav Schechter said that he's sure that Rav Salvechik held this halach lemaisa, that it wasn't stam a drasha, some as many want to say, but he was certain that Rav Salvechik held this halach lemaisa. I heard in the name of Chaim Ilson that Rav Chaim Ilson said that if Rav Salvechik said it, it must have only been a drasha. But Rav Schechter said that no, he was certain Rav Salvechik meant this halach lemaisa, that the Germans have a din of Amalek, so much so that when people would ask him about taking war reparations from the Germans, they send checks to the German government, sends checks to the victims to their own victims. That was part of the deal after the war was over. So Rav Salvechik held that you couldn't take the money, because the nechassim of Amalek, any money that belongs to Amalek, is aser ba'ana. You're not allowed to get hana from nechassim of Amalek. And he held the halacha, they had a din of Amalek. So they had a din of Amalek, you weren't allowed to take the money. I once asked Rav Schechter, but they're not giving us their money, they're giving us back our money. So why is that called Hanah from the Nechassim of Amalek? He said it's a good kasha. He never really understood why that logical extension should be, that you shouldn't be allowed to take the money. But he just mentioned it as a way of demonstrating and illustrating that Rav Salvechik really meant this. The halacha lemaisa, that Germany has a din of Amalek. Now, let's, instead of just accepting everything as is, let's take a careful look. Is that really the only pshat in the Rambam? Why the Rambam would not say Kvar Avad Zichron by Amalek? Good. So very important chiluk. The first halacha dalit, he's talking about killing somebody. So he says, don't worry, kvar avad zichram. Second halacha, he's not talking about killing. He's talking about to remember the Maisa Amalek. So he doesn't have to say kvar avad zichram, because it doesn't matter. I mean, the point is not to kill at this point. That's not what he's focusing on. He's focusing on the mitzvah to keep in mind what the terrible things that they did to us. Very good. Also, what does the word Kfar Avad Zichra mean? What does Kfar Avad Zichra mean? It means that, so there are two possibilities. One possibility is we can't identify them anymore. The other possibility is they don't exist. So the way we understood it is we can't identify them anymore. But he doesn't say that about Amalek because we don't need to identify them. All you need to do is identify a nation that wants to kill us, and you have identified Amalek. You don't have to identify the original nation of Amalek. But maybe that's not what the Rambam means. Maybe Kfar Avad Zichron doesn't mean we can't identify them anymore. Maybe it means they simply don't exist anymore. In fact, the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvos seems to indicate along these lines. I didn't have a chance to include it in the Mar Makomos, but the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvos, if I'm not mistaken, writes that by the time of David HaMelech, the original Zayin Amimim were Kvar Avadu. He writes, "Umilchamta milchamis mitzvah, v'ulayach shov kizu mitzvah she'enu nohegas adoros achas shiva amim Kvar Avadu." Right? You might say that it doesn't apply anymore because they're gone already. The Rambam is defending why the mitzvah of killing Zayin Amim is a mitzvah that's noeg l'doros. Meaning, generally speaking, he's not going to count mitzvahs that aren't noeg l'doros, that aren't observed through all the generations. So the Rambam is defending why is the mitzvah of killing Zayin Amim noeg l'doros. So he says, just because they don't exist anymore, doesn't mean it's not noeg l'doros. But the point is, meaning he wants to say that since in theory they could have existed, and if they did, we would still have the mitzvah, so it's called Noeg L'doros. You're not going to say it's not Noeg L'doros because in fact they don't exist anymore. But the Rambam says very clearly that in fact the Zayin Amim do not exist anymore. So Kfar Avad Zichron doesn't mean, according to the Rambam, very likely, does not mean we can't identify them. It very likely means they simply do not exist. As opposed to Amalek, which there is no such thing that they don't. We have no such Masorah that Amalek doesn't exist. To the contrary, Shaul never finished the job. Shaul kept King Agag alive, and he got punished for it. But the bottom line is, he kept King Agag alive with enough time to reproduce and to keep Amalek going. And Amalek was around in the times of Haman. Haman was from Amalek. And the Gemara tells us, we'll soon see, B'nei Banav Shal Haman, the descendants of Haman, are Melamed Torah in Bnei Brak, are learning Torah nowadays, which we'll discuss what exactly that means. But the point is, it was never gone. It was never destroyed. The idea of Amalek, the people were never destroyed as opposed to the Zayin Amim. That would explain the discrepancy also. That explains why the Rambam would say Kfar Avad Zichron by one and not by the other. So was Rav Soloveitchik unaware of this Rambam, the Sefer HaMitzvos? Unlikely that he was unaware of it. I saw on the only blog I read, there's a blog called Hirhurim, which is a very educational blog, actually. So he quoted the English translation of Kol Dodi Dofeik, where Rav Soloveitchik discusses in Kol Dodi Dofeik this issue, and he writes the following. And again, I don't have another Mar Makomos, so I'll read it quickly, and then we have to get moving to the second part of the shir, which is really the crux of the shir. But he writes, "I heard the answer from my father of blessed memory," apparently he says from his father, "every nation that conspires to destroy the Jewish people is considered by the halacha to be Amalek. My father added that as concerns Amalek itself, we were commanded to perform two mitzvahs. Tzvei dinim in Amalek. Number one, for the individual to blot out the memory of Amalek, which is incumbent on everyone to slay any individual member of Amalek that he encounters, as expounded in the Torah portion of Kiseitzeh, you shall blot out the memory of Amalek," meaning on an individual basis, if you see someone who's not Amaleki, you have to kill them. "And number two, for the community to engage in communal military preparedness for war against Amalek," that it's a national mitzvah, as explained in the Torah portion of B'Shalach, "the Lord will wage war with Amalek from generation to generation, midar dar. With relation to any other nation that stands ready to destroy us, we are now after the time of Samcheir commanded to wage war against it, even while it prepares for war against us, and our war against it is a war of mitzvah, in accordance with the command of the Torah, that the Lord will wage war with Amalek from generation to generation. So, however, the destruction of individuals, which is derived from the Torah portion of Kiseitzeh, refers only to the biological descendants of Amalek." So essentially, what does Rav Soloveitchik say? Yes, it's true. Amalek is not a nation, but a notion. But that's only in regards to the national mitzvah. In regards to the individual mitzvah of destroying Amalek, it is a nation, and they have to have lineage to Amalek in order to be considered Amalek, in order for one to have a chiyuv on an individual level to destroy them. So even according to Rav Soloveitchik, this idea that any nation that tries to kill the Jewish people has a din of Amalek, that means that as a nation, we can't recognize them as a nation, and we have to destroy them as a nation, and we have to do whatever we can nationally to get rid of them. But on an individual basis, right, we wouldn't want to take that out on the individual. It could be, just suggesting, that Rav Soloveitchik held when it comes to taking the money from the government, that's the nation, and therefore they have a din of Amalek. That we can't do. But someone who wants to convert, who's a German guy wants to come and convert, that's an individual. So it could be that he doesn't have a din of Amalek. Just a suggestion. I'm not sure what Rav Soloveitchik said about dealing with the individuals, and it's murky enough to figure out what he said at all in terms of whether this halacha, drush, or what he meant exactly when he said the Germans are Amalek. But that's essentially part number one of the shir. The possible reasons to assume Germany is Amalek, and possible reasons to assume that each of those reasons are inadequate, and that perhaps Germany is in fact not Amalek. But let's assume, for the sake of argument, that they are Amalek. So what would be the problem with taking a ger from Amalek? It doesn't say in the Torah that you can't take a ger from Amalek. So the problem is as follows. There is a mechilta in Parshas B'Shalach, there's a medrash in Parshas B'Shalach that says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sitting on his kisei, and Rabbi Elazar darshins that on the phrase midor dar as follows. If you look in source number 7, about 5 lines before the end, actually 3 lines into the source, Rabbi Elazar Omer nishba amakom b'kisei hakavod shelo, God swears by his kisei hakavod, shim yavo echem mikalumos olam l'skayer, that if anyone from any of the nations of the world comes to convert, shei kabluhu, take him. Ula Amalek ulebeso lo yikabluhu, but never accept anyone from Amalek or from his house. Shenemar vayomer David alanar hamagdo emi zeata vayomer ben ish ger Amalek yanochi. And what's his raya that you're not allowed to take a convert from Amalek? Because David Amalek at the beginning of Sefer Shmuel Beis meets up with this young guy who claims to be a son of an Amaleki ger. And what does David Amalek do to him? Niskar David bos Hashem mashenemer leMoshe Rabbeinu. David then remembers what was said to Moshe Rabbeinu. Im yavo echem mikalum osol shebeolam niskar yishikablu. That if anyone comes from any of the nations of the world, take him. Umi beso shalamalek shelo yikabluhu. But if anyone comes from Amalek, don't accept them. Miyarza right away. Vayomri love David. Damchal roshcha kipicha anabach. David Amalek says to him, your blood is on your own head. You have just spoken yourself into death. Meaning, you claim, the way the Medrash is apparently understanding, you claim you are the son of a ger Amaleki, so you're from Amalek, I'm going to kill you. And therefore, lekach nemar midar dar, that's what the pasuk means, midar dar in Parshas B'Shalach. So David HaMelech kills, if you look in the Navi, David HaMelech kills this young man. He kills this boy who says he's from Amalek. So there are a number of problems with this Medrash. I said, if you look in the Navi. So if you look in the Navi and you look at what the story is, it doesn't really go like that. I mean, David HaMelech does kill him. He does not kill him because he's from Amalek. What's the story? So if you look, it's a two-part story. The end of Shmuel Aleph seems to tell one story. The beginning of Shmuel Bey seems to tell another story. Shmuel Aleph is mostly about David's problems with Shaul, right? David's relationship with Shaul, which was tumultuous to say the least. And Shaul was out to kill David. And finally, at the very end of Shmuel Aleph, is the end of Shaul. Shaul's malchus didn't last all that long. It was only 2 years. But still, it takes up a lot of space in Navi. So at the end of Shmuel Aleph, we find out about Shaul's downfall. So how is it described? So if you look at source number 9, Vatichbar amelchama el Shaul, Vayimtzu amorim anashim akeshes, Vayachol ma'od me'amorim. Shaul was found by the enemy, and he was afraid. Vayomer Shaul l'nosei chelav. And Shaul says to the guy who is in charge of carrying his kelim, carrying his war utensils, his instruments, his knives, swords, whatever, Shalov charbecha, take your sword, draw your sword, udkareniva, and stab me. I don't want these people, I don't want the plishtim, I don't want them to be the ones to kill me. Then they'll just mock me, and I don't want them to have the joy of knowing that they were the ones who were able to kill the first Jewish king.
His nosei kelim could not kill him because he was terrified.
So what did Shaul do? He took the sword himself and he committed suicide. He fell on it himself.
Vayar nosei chelav kimes Shaul. The nosei chelav saw that Shaul died. Vayipol gam hu al charbo vayamasimo.
And he killed himself as well, and he died together with his master. He died together with Shaul. That's the story of Shaul's death at the end of Shmuel Aleph. Problem is, you look at the beginning of Shmuel Beis. Apparently, same story is being told. A na'ar, a young man, comes to David HaMelech to report to him what happened. So vayomer David el na'ar hamagdo emi ze'ata. So he said to this na'ar who just told him that Shaul died, who are you?
Vayomer, and the na'ar says, ben ish ger amaleki anochi. I am the child of an Amaleki convert.
Vayomer elav David, eich lo yareso l'shloch yodcha l'shachis es Mashiach Hashem. The na'ar had claimed, I left out the psukim before that, which was silly of me, but the Nar had told David, I saw Shaul and I killed him. I'm the one who killed Shaul. So David says to him, how could you kill Mashiach Hashem? How could you kill a king? Now, you could imagine, the kid thought he'd get a position in the cabinet. He thought that David and Shaul was out to kill David for all these years, and now he thought that this would be this David would kiss him. He thought it would be great. David reacts in the exact opposite way. He says, "You can't kill a king." Now it's also in David's best interest to defend, prosecute those who kill kings to the full extent of the law, especially now that Shaul's dead. Because now there's really only one king, so he certainly doesn't want it to become okay, it's de jure to kill kings, right? So he's going to deal with the person who killed the last king very harshly. And he calls someone an executioner, and he says, "Kill him." Vayomrei lav David damcha al roshecha kificha anavchalemar anochi mosati as Mashiach Hashem. Mechilta cleverly left out the last part of the pasuk. Mechilta says it's from that pasuk Tazayin, that you see that David killed him because he was an Amaleki, because he says it was what you said that made me want to kill you. And the Mechilta assumes that what does it mean what you said? That you said you're the son of an Amaleki ger, so you're an Amaleki, so I killed you. What does it say in pasuk? There's the last few words. What you said, Leimor, saying Anochi Mosati is Mashiach Hashem, that you killed Shaul. I'm not killing you because you're an Amaleki. I'm killing you because you killed Shaul. That's Pasha Pshat and Pasuk, what it's talking about. That's why he killed him. Nothing to do with being an Amaleki. So the Medrash, while it says that there is this issue to accept converts from Amalek, and uses this Pasuk as the source, as the fact that David killed him because he was a convert from Amalek, assuming that the conversion must have been invalid, and therefore he's just a stam old Amaleki, and that's why David killed him, it's a little bit hard to read it. It's more than a little bit hard. It's very difficult to read into the Pshat and the Psukim. And in fact, all the Echronim ask this Kasha. We're not going to read through the Torah Tamima. We don't have time to go through all the sources inside. But if you take a look at Source Amri, the Torah Tamima goes through this particular issue, that it's directly against the Psukim in Navi, the story that's told by the Psukim in Navi. Also, the Hegyonei Halacha of Mirsky writes in Hegyonei Halacha, as a piece on accepting converts from Amalek, so he writes that it's also an unusual choice of psukim to prove the point. Meaning, if there's any pasuk that proves that the Medrash is wrong, it's the pasuk that the Medrash quoted. If the Medrash wanted to quote a pasuk about not accepting gerim from Amalek, there are much better psukim to have quoted. It could have quoted the pasuk about the kid saying that I'm a ger Amaleki, right? That I'm a ben ger Amaleki, and there were the pasuk right after that says that David told someone to kill him. But to dafka quote the pasuk that says that David said, "I killed you because you said that you killed Shaul," it's very, very strange. Why would you quote that pasuk? That's the pasuk that's really right, that's really directly against you. So that's another oddity in the Medrash. Another oddity in the Medrash, a third oddity in the Medrash, is that is David justified? A guy is a ger Amaleki, he's a ger. So let's assume he has the din of a Jew. So is David justified to kill him? So how does he know that this guy killed Shaul? By the way, how do you make it shtim with the end of Shmuel Aleph?
just parenthetically, probably what happened was, Shaul, if you want to make the stories fit, was that this Shaul jumped on his sword, his Nosei Kalev did the same, Nosei Kalev died on the spot, and Shaul was suffering. He didn't die right away. And this Ger HaMaleki came along, because the Ger HaMaleki described that Shaul asked me to kill him. He said, I didn't just stop kill him. He asked me to kill him. So probably what it means is that I saw him on his sword. He wasn't yet killed. That story is true, right? The story at the end of Shmuel Aleph. It's true. He jumped on the sword because he didn't want the Plishtim to kill him. But then he asked me to take him out of his misery and to kill him. So I did. That's all the Ger HaMaleki did. It was the Makkah Bepatish. It was the final thing. That's all he did. It was the last straw when Shaul was going to die anyway. He was just suffering. So that's what the Ger HaMaleki did. So that raises a whole slew of questions. Why would David kill him for that? If you kill somebody who's about to die, so a person is horiges a treifa, if you kill a treifa, you're not chayiv misa for killing a treifa. Right? That's enough in the Gemara, that if you kill a treifa, you're not chayiv misa. That's source number 13, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Dafayin Ches. Hakol modim b'horiges a treifa, true pater. Everyone agrees if you kill a treifa, you're pater. The Gemara in Yavama says, furthermore, Adam karovet alatzma vein adam es matzma rasha. A person is considered related to themselves, and therefore, you know, the Mesa Matzma Rasha, a person is not believed to say, how did David know that this was true? That this guy killed him? So he didn't know. All he knew is because the guy told him. This Ger HaMaleki told him that he killed him. So based on his own testimony, you're going to kill him? You know, the Mesa Matzma Rasha, a person's not allowed to incriminate himself with his own testimony. You need Eidos. You need something. You need someone against him. You need to weigh them against him. So how was David justified in going out and killing him? So the Rambam actually asks these questions. If you look in the Rambam, in source number 14, in Hilchas Sanhedrin, Perek Yud Ches, Halacha Vav, the Rambam writes that we have a Gzeres HaKasuv, that Beis Din does not kill a person based on their own admission. And then three lines before the end, V'zeh Shaharag Yoshua Achan, V'David L'ger HaMaleki, Bahoda Aspiem, that which Yoshua killed Achan, when his only evidence was a Goral, and Achan admitting to it. That was his evidence. He didn't have any testimony, anyone that saw Achan take the spoils of Yericho when he wasn't supposed to. Now, they found the money in Achan's tent, but still, that's not enough. That's circumstantial. Right? He didn't find any strong edos that Achan, in fact, took the spoils of Yericho, and yet, all he had was Achan admitting to it before he died, doing a vidoy, and he killed him with that alone. And also by David, our case, killing the Ger HaMaleki, but does PM. How is that allowed? Says the Rambam, Horash Sha'a Haisa. That was a Horasha. It was a one-time thing. They felt it was necessary. Now, with Yoshua's story, it was certainly necessary, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Yoshua, get off your face and do something about what just happened, otherwise you're going to keep on losing the Battle of Ai. Meaning the Jews lost a crippling, terrible battle in Ai, which was supposed to be a joke. It was supposed to be an easy city to take over. But after the sin of Achan and taking spoils from Yericho, the Jews lost the Battle of Ai, and they were terribly hurt by it. And so HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Yoshua, get rid of the culprit and then you'll be okay. So Yeshua had to do something. So that's certainly Harasha. David also, though, perhaps feeling that the killing of a king is something that you can't just let it go, so Harasha wasn't by normal standards of evidence. Odin Malchusaya Avla Sanhedrin, but if this were up to a Sanhedrin, then absolutely Ein Mamisin, and we would not kill someone based on this alone. That's how the Rambam writes. And in fact, the Yavitz puts it, we'll just read the shorter sources because we're going to run out of time otherwise. The Yavitz in source number 16 writes, Nir be'enai umaisa David b'amleki tzarech lomar melech shayni v'ra shah ha'isa. Also, that it must have been a ra shah because of the melech issue. So that is one approach to answering why David HaMelech killed this Ger HaMaleki. But there is a more, I don't know if you want to call it a more sophisticated approach, but certainly one that's not such, it's not a two-word answer. And that's offered by a whole slew of achronim. I found it in the Shevet HaLevi, which, again, he has this one tshuva about whether you're allowed to convert an HaMaleki, a German rather. So he discusses the issue. He quotes the following approach, and he quotes it from the Merkavah, and he says afterwards that after he thought of it, he saw it in the Merkavah Mishnah, in source number 17. And he says as follows, Ul Rabbi Eliezer Yireh, de gam de yeved lo mahani im kibluhu, that
if you're mekabel a ger amaleki, it doesn't work. Even b'diyeved, it doesn't count as a valid form of geris. V'only b'zed Reb Lezer mi mikra Shmuel beiz aleph shenemar ben ish ger amaleki anochi. V'nizkar David ba'us v'shav mashenemar l'moshe Rabbeinu shem beis amalek lo yikablu v'yom lo David damcha b'roshcha. This is just quoting the Medrash, ki picha anabach. Now here he goes. V'adavar tumua. It's very strange. Because in the Pesukim it says, the Lobishvil se hargo. He didn't kill him because he was from Amalek. El Lobishvil shashilach yad b'mashiach Hashem, b'shal hamelech. Rather, he killed him because this guy killed the king. El al korchach da perish. So what you have to say, Pshad, is, de eich hargo al piatzmo, de nadim nerig al piatzmo. That anyway, you have the kasha that we asked. How could you kill him based on his own self-incrimination? El kivan she'en lomar she omar lo shehu ger amaleki, since he told him he's ger amaleki, the ger rozet should be lomahani gam diyeved, and when you convert from amalek, even b'diyeved, it's an invalid gerus. V'imkei nishra lo din ben noach shenerag. David HaMelech shenerag al pi dayanecha ve'edacha v'uadin al pi atzmo. David HaMelech realized, wait a second, if this guy in front of me is a Jew, I have to follow all the rules. I can't kill him al pi ed echad or al pi atzmo when he just says his own edus. I wouldn't be allowed to. I wouldn't kill him for killing a treifa. None of those. I wouldn't be allowed to do any of this. But he himself said that he's a ger amaleki. Now I know that you're not allowed to take converts from amalek, and therefore the entire gerus is invalid if you take a convert from amalek. So says Rav Azman, that was David's cheshbon. David says, why am I killing? Why do I want to kill him? Stam because he's an Amaleki? That's not why I want to kill him. I want to kill him because he killed Shaul. And I want to make an example of him, and everyone should know that the guy who killed Shaul was brought to justice and was killed. The only thing is, if he's a Jew, I'm not allowed to do it. Because it's only al piatzmo, self-incrimination. So, and he killed the treifa. So I can't do it if he's a Jew. Oh, but he himself told me that he's a ger Amaleki, which means he's not a Jew. He's really an Amaleki. And with a halach is by a guy you can give misa to al pi eid echad. If only one aid says that a guy killed someone, you're allowed to go ahead and kill him. So since he himself said that he's a guy, that he's a ger amaleki, which in my mind means a guy, that was David's justification in killing him. And this explains the Medrash beautifully. Why does the Medrash quote the pasuk that talks about how it was your mouth that brought upon you this death? If you look at the pasuk, it says it was the fact that he killed Shaul that brought upon him his death. It's the combination of the two. Had he only killed Shaul but been a Jew, David would not have been allowed to kill him. But because he acknowledged that he wasn't a Jew, that opened the door for David to kill him, not for being an Amaleki, but for killing Shaul. And David was able to make an example out of him. That's the Pshat in the Medrash. That's how Rav Azner and the Merkabes HaMishnah and others explain the Medrash. Now that assumes very clearly that if you cannot accept a ger from Amalek, it means that the gerus is invalid, that there's absolutely no gerus. Not necessarily clear that that's the case. There is a beautiful sefer called Emek Bracha, and in the Emek Bracha, he suggests that the Isser to be Mekabel ger. Well, he deals with a question that we really, if we had more time, we deal with more extensively. There is a Gemara in Gittin, Daf Nun Zayin, that says, it's in the Mar Makomos, that B'nai Banav Shal Haman were Melamei Torah and B'nai Brak. That Haman's grandchildren, great-grandchildren, were teaching Torah and B'nai Brak. So everyone deals with the question, if you're not allowed to accept a Ger Amaleki, how did Haman's grandchildren end up in B'nai Brak learning Torah? Right? How are they Jewish? How can you have Haman's grandchildren being Jewish? So what the Emek Bracha suggests is as follows. He suggests there is an Isser to accept a ger from Amalek. Why? Where does the Isser come from? He says, no, the Isser isn't, it's not an independent Isser. It's part of the mitzvah of killing Amalek. Meaning it's a bitul asay. You have a mitzvah asay to destroy Amalek. Anytime you take someone out of the possibility of being a victim of yours for, you know, being an Amaleki, you have been mevatel the mitzvah asay. You have given up another opportunity for the mitzvah to say. When you convert the Amaleki, obviously you're no longer allowed to kill him. But then you were just mevatel the mitzvah to say. So that's why you're not. It doesn't mean the conversion is invalid. No, if the conversion was invalid, then it wouldn't be a bitul of the mitzvah. It's only a bitul of the mitzvah because the conversion is valid. So he says, someone comes and converts, and then we later find out he's an Amaleki. Conversion is valid. There's nothing you can do about it. Now he's a Jew.
right? He's not an Amaleki. So the Bnei Baruch Shal Haman are fine. They're learning Torah in Bnei Brak, that's fine. But obviously this approach assumes different than Rav Azner assumed with that whole pshat in David HaMelech. But that's his Charif is the Gevar. The Pasha pshat in that Gemara, and this is what Rav Yosef Engel writes in Galion Yashas, it's also in the Maram Kalmos, but again, don't really have time to get into it, is just that Bnei Banim Shal Haman is Lav Dafka. The words Bnei Banim don't always mean patrilineal descent. It doesn't always mean son after son. It could be Bnei Banos, somewhere along the line of Haman that we're learning Torah Bnei Brak. So with the Goyim, the nationhood goes after the father. So if an Amaleki girl marries a guy from a French guy, and they have a child, the child is Bnei Banim Shal Haman maybe, but the child's allowed to convert. He's not an Amaleki, so he'd be allowed to convert. So that's the way that many of the Acharon, the Galion Hashas, Rav Yosef Engel, writes to understand it. The Chazanish has a Chiddush also. I guess we'll close with this one. The Chazanish, and just one more Maror Makom, Chazanish says that the difference is between times of war and not times of war. That during a time of war, because the Rambam clearly seems to assume that you're allowed to accept Gerim from Malik, does not quote any Isser to accept Gerim from Malik. So the Chazanish says, because the whole Isser only applies during times of war. When it's not during a time of war, you're allowed to accept Gerim from a Malik. So even if you know someone's from a Malik, you're allowed to accept them as Gerim. Those who disagree with the Chazanish would say that the Rambam just totally rejects the Medrash. Not that the Rambam would hold that it's also to accept Gerim, but that it's always Mutter. The Rambam just completely rejects this Medrash about any specific Isser of being Mekabel Gerim from a Malik. So to make a long story short, we really rushed through the last few Maror Makomos to finish somewhat on time. But to make a long story short, end of the day, this Dayan, who got up in the Beis in Yerushalayim and said, no, you can't be Mekabel this guy, he's German. So he's wrong on all accounts, right? The fact that to say that he's German and therefore an Amaleki is very questionable, to assume that he's an Amaleki. Even if you say he is an Amaleki, that might only mean, like Rav Soloveitchik said, on the national level, not on an individual level. And the assumption that if he is an Amaleki, you're not allowed to convert him, is also somewhat questionable. It's a Medrash. But it seems that the Rambam doesn't accept it la'alacha because he doesn't quote it la'alacha, and exactly what the Medrash meant is somewhat debatable. So it seems, and Rav Azner quotes this in his Maskana, source number 26, at the end of the Tshuva, he says at least a Svek Sveka to allow converting this Ger Amaleki. Now, if you had someone who you knew for sure was Amalek, the Mechilta would be enough of a Suffolk to tell you not to convert him. But once you don't even know what a German, you can't say that a German is necessarily a Malik. So it's a Svek Sveka, he said, absolutely, we're allowed to be Mekabel Gerim from Germany. Okay.